So, I mean, don't worry. I don't have anybody specific in mind with the topic today. This is a general topic. Okay, as you see, it says in the top, suicide-euthanasia. I'm not as interested in speaking about suicide. It's just next time I plan to talk about euthanasia, but in order to get to euthanasia, we have to deal with suicide first. So the truth is that within suicide, there's many, many other issues to talk about that I'm not going to bring up. So just to keep in mind, therefore, that I'm not dealing with suicide as a topic, rather as an introduction to euthanasia. That's clear? If you have questions about
euthanasia, suicide when you can't do it yourself.
Maybe. Well, let's start out with what may or may not be an obvious observation. Where does it say in the Torah that you're not allowed to commit suicide? So right over here we have our attention. So are we fooled by virtue of the fact that it's called suicide, which is a new term, or is it murder? Which means, what's the definition of murder? Murder would be the unjustified, premeditated taking of life. Right? We can agree with that definition?
But suicide, the person who commits suicide says it's justified, otherwise it wouldn't do it.
A lot of people commit murder say it's justified. Right? Are there any lawyers over here? Is that a good definition?
What do you mean by what do I mean?
say you want to kill yourself, so you decide I'm going to go deliberately break Shabbat, and then I'm going to stone myself in punishment for that.
No.
And that's a justified, according to the Torah, that would be a justified.
No. If you broke Shabbat because you wanted to get killed, then it would be a malacha she'enu tzricha l'gufa, and you wouldn't be chayev. One second, I'm very serious. I'm very serious about that.
In the Torah and then put yourself in that category.
Okay, can we start all over again? I'm not going to debate with you right now what is justified, what's not justified, because that you can debate. Leave me alone. Go home, bother someone else. That seems really as that means you shouldn't eat like red meat. that only have high cholesterol. But are you obligated to test your cholesterol? I mean, that's a whole other question. I'm saying that would seem to be using too little ammunition, which means if there's much stronger verses to me. Marion thinks I didn't pay attention to her before. Bereshit Perek Tet Pasuk Hey and Vav is what you're looking for. Found it. Where it may or may not say there that you're not allowed to, may or may not, it's not as clear as you thought it was, where it may or may not say you can't commit suicide. But could we go back to the beginning again? Did anybody not like my definition of murder? My definition was that murder is, retzach is, a deliberate, unjustified taking of life. Now you can start bothering what deliberate is. I'm not debating what deliberate is. You can start to debate with me what justified is. I'm not debating that. I'm just saying that in the event that somebody takes a life in a deliberate fashion and it's not justified, so now you're going to tell me who's the one who defines justified? That's a very interesting question, which means some people will claim that that's a societal. Some people claim that there are morals which transcend society. I'm not getting involved in that discussion now, which means what ultimately is the difference between murder versus killing. Killing, at times, is permitted, right? Jewish law would say, and other law would say, that there are times that killing is permitted, correct? When is it permitted? When it's justified. Which means the difference, therefore, between killing and murder will be if it's justified or not. Now, it could be that most of you would tell me that to kill another Jew is murder. And it could be that if you lived in Nazi Germany, they would tell you that to kill a Jew is not murder. By the way, they may not even say that it's killing. They may dehumanize the victim and then say it's not murder, it's not killing, it's extermination. You didn't do something bad, you did something good. It's a very big mitzvah. So therefore, what is the definition of justified is obviously going to be a crucial issue, but I told you, I'm not discussing that. Yes. If there are any neo-Nazis over here, sorry, discuss it with someone else. Yes. Well, what I'm getting at with that is that, and at this point, that point we can debate. That I think is a fair point, but are we being fooled by the virtue of the fact that it says lo tirtzach, which we would define as don't commit murder, but it doesn't say don't commit suicide. But then again, I can counter and say, well, it also says didn't say don't commit fratricide. So the fact that I can make a new word up, fratricide is killing your brother, and you can make up, I don't know, other, right? Right, and you can keep on going in terms of making up definitions of people that you say, oh, it's not included, it didn't say it over there. But
suicide, in the English language, murder. We don't, if someone commits suicide, you don't say that person's
murdered. Well, isn't that interesting? Yeah. And now define for me euthanasia. Euthanasia is?
Mercy.
Ah, now, that's fascinating. Euthanasia is mercy killing. Why don't we call it compassionate murder? What I'm trying to get at is that there are, is exactly, but there are politics involved in the words, which means the fact that somebody wants to call euthanasia mercy killing, they're already going a long way. First of all, they're claiming it's not murder. Why isn't it murder? Because I guess because it's compassionate. So when you call it mercy killing, what you're really trying to claim to someone is that this. So, but that's the point. In Hebrew, at least, there are different words between killing and murder. Retzach versus Hariga. It's not the same word, and I strongly suspect that in English, especially in terms of legal considerations, there are different words as well, murder versus killing.
And manslaughter.
And manslaughter would be even a lower level of killing. So when it says in the Torah, lo tirtzach, so I'm going back, Ten Commandments, skipped over Noah, apologies to Noah and to his children, going straight to Ten Commandments, lo tirtzach. Lo tirtzach does not say you shall not kill. It doesn't say that. What does it say? Shall not murder. Which means why? Sorry, why? Because there are times that one is permitted to kill. One is permitted to kill in self-defense. One is permitted to kill to stop an outrage from taking place. A good Samaritan, the same way that I can protect myself, I'm allowed to protect somebody else. Now, when I therefore asked the question, so what is murder? And again, I had a definition that I walked in here with. Some of you seem not to like it. My definition is an unjustified, deliberate taking of life. So I was already told that it's not fair if I use that definition, because then I seem to answer my question before I begin and say, well, suicide is included. Now, that's as far as looking at the Torah. There are another two verses in Parshat Noach which deals with something called Shvichat Damim, the spilling of blood, which we will come back to a little bit later. But before we get there, let me point out something which may or may not be interesting to you. And this, I don't think I touched in the very beginning when we did the introduction, which I said I wasn't going to do in the first week. There are certain topics where you would be quite surprised to find out that the entire Talmudic corpus, which I will define right now as Mishnah and Gemara, and maybe even Midrash Halacha and Tosefta, does not discuss the basic question saying, it says lo tirtzach. Again, this is I'm making up a discussion which is not there. It says lo tirtzach. And then I can ask a fair question. Is lo tirtzach, do not murder, does that only mean somebody else? What if a person killed themselves? And then the Gemara would answer and say, either. Okay, if you want. Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. And Beit Shammai says, yes, it's certainly included because it says the taking of life. And Beit Hillel says, no, only taking another life, you're allowed to take your own life. That discussion doesn't exist. There is no such discussion. We, therefore, have to argue out of silence. By the way, you want to know another discussion that doesn't exist? Abortion. As much as people can discuss with great passion what Judaism says about it, let's realize with a little bit of humility that there is no such discussion. Again, asking, it's not that it's never discussed, and it's not that suicide is never discussed. We'll see. They're both discussed. But there is a lack of that clear discussion, raising the question, analyzing the issue, and then hopefully some kind of conclusion. They're not there. Consequently, you can already therefore anticipate that there will be a far larger range of opinions by these kinds of topics than you will find by topics that do have a clear discussion within the Talmud. Okay, so that's very important for you to know, because otherwise you can ask me this week, so, well, why aren't we starting with the Talmud and find the Talmudic discussion? So now you all know the wonderful answer to that, which is? There is no clear Talmudic discussion. Now that's a wonderful question. One person can argue, because it's allowed, another person can argue, well, they never imagined that it was different to murder someone else than to murder yourself. You can argue either way on that, and by the way, you can say the same thing with abortion. Of course, it's considered murder. Nothing to talk about. Someone else can say, no, not at all. We'll leave abortion out of this. If you like, I will come back to it another time. But that's a wonderful question. But can I give you a simplistic answer? Not everything is discussed in the Talmud. Okay? Not every single topic that interests us today is discussed in the Talmud. As much as people will like to tell you everything is in the Talmud, guess what? Not everything is there, and things that are there are not necessarily discussed the way we would want them to be discussed. And when we begin to realize which kind of literature is actually being used in the discussion, there's another surprise coming in, because they're not using a legal discussion, they're telling stories. And once you're telling stories, you're dealing with just on a completely different level of discourse. So that's our introduction for today. So let's start again. Yeah, but it's different kinds of stories, as we'll say. It's what we would call Agadah more than Halacha. So therefore, when you have to go to Agadot and stories in the Talmud and try to discern information, you get a little stuck, because sometimes the story itself is meant to be a sad story. And the fact that somebody may have committed suicide over there doesn't necessarily mean that they're right.
No, you're missing my point.
I understand your point. Your point is that when you study law, you use case study. So therefore, I take an example and I analyze it. I use a halachic methodology to analyze the story. That doesn't exist. Which means later authorities will try to do that, but sometimes they'll be overwhelmed. Well, that story took place. You know what? There's a very big shadow on the entire topic. And that shadow, as we'll see, I mean, I could have waited till we got there, but that shadow is the behavior of the Jews during the First Crusade. So you can go look up between 1096, 1099, and take a look how the Jewish community behaved during that time. And the reality is that there was an incredible amount, but not just suicide. We'll come to it. Again, I'm getting a little ahead of myself.
And Qumran also, right? And the Masada, didn't they also kill themselves?
Yeah, but the discussion of the martyrs of Masada did not enter into halachic literature to a fairly late period, which means there is no mention of the Masada suicides in the Talmudic corpus. That itself, by the way, is very interesting, and so much so that one has to therefore question, and it has been questioned, whether Josephus is telling the truth over here. Josephus tells us that it's not the only time it happened, tells us another place that it happened and he was there, which makes, once you have a theme, it makes it a little bit questionable. Masada has been incredibly politicized, and it was utilized one way in the beginning years of the State of Israel, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, in terms of, you know, we will fight the last man and so on. And then it was reinterpreted by academics in the 80s and 90s, once the peace movements begin, and you know where peace movements begin, and therefore the academics who were dealing with the same exact issue come to the opposite conclusion. Where did this ever come from? And there are no such story, and this is not part of our collective history and so on, or imagination. But what happened in Masada did not impact the rabbis in the Middle Ages as much as the behavior during the Crusades did, because this was their community versus a story that may or may not have taken place a long, long time ago, separated, you know, by geography and chronology. Yeah.
Is it possible to look at the halakha from the opposite direction, not from what you're forbidden to do, but how you're, I mean, are there halakhot about you, you take care of yourself and you you have to take care of your body, you can't do things to damage it, and you're not supposed to.
Right, that's the direction my mother started taking, and I think that's a very fair point. I'm saying, but first I want to know, is there a larger consideration? Which means before I get to guarding yourself and taking care of yourself and exercising and even going to the dentist if you have to, or if you don't have to, is there also a verse stated, thou shalt not commit murder, including yourself? Meaning, does that include, that makes a big difference, what the starting point is. So, let's begin with a famous attempted euthanasia, which resulted in a suicide, which is in Tanakh, which won't help us, by the way. But we'll think it helps us, so we'll learn it. And that's source number one. It's the end of Shmuel Aleph, and it's a story about Shaul HaMelech. Uplishtim nilchamim b'Yisrael v'yanusu anshei Yisrael b'pnei plishtim v'yipu chalim b'har ha-Gilboa. And the Philistines were fighting against Israel, and Israel, the Israelites ran away from the plishtim, and many victims fell near Mount Gilboa. V'yidbeku plishtim et Shaul v'et banav, and they became closer to the king, Shaul, and his children. V'yaku plishtim et Yehonatan v'et Avinadav v'et Malkishua b'nei Shaul, and now Shaul's sons were all killed. And as far as we're up to right now, it sounds as if Shaul is by himself, and he is about to be surrounded by the enemy. The people had left, the princes are dead, and there is Shaul. V'tichpad ha-milchama el Shaul, and the battle increased. V'imtzu ha-morim anashim bakashet, the people who were shooting the bows and arrows, their arrows found their victim, they found him. V'yachel ma'od me-ha-morim, and became quite injured from the arrows. V'yoma Shaul le-nosei kelav, and here we become aware that there is somebody else with him. He says to his arms bearer, Shlof charbicha, draw your sword, vidakreni, and please kill me, stab me. Vakreni bug, stab me with it. Pen yavo ha'arelim ha'ele, lest these heathen come, udrakruni vihit alalubi, lest they stab me and they torture me. Velo avo nosei kelav, ki yarei ma'od. And the arms bearer was not prepared to kill him, for he was quite frightened. V'yikach Shaul et acherev, and Shaul therefore took the cherev, and now you know where this famous phrase came from, v'yipol aleha, and he fell on his sword, which is probably a very effective and efficient way of trying to kill yourself, rather than just stab yourself with the sword. He put it down, and he fell on the sword. V'yar nosei kilav, ki made Shaul, and the arms bearer saw that Shaul had died, v'yipol gamhu al cherbo, v'yamat imo. And he also fell on his sword, he died with him. Those of you who are interested in the continuation of the story, go to the beginning of Shmuel Bet, where there's somebody else who claimed to have been on the scene at the time, and David HaMelech deals with him as he deals with him. You could look over there, but it's the story itself is not clear when you compare it to the beginning of Shmuel Bet. So here we have Shaul. Shaul is injured. Whether his injury is a terminal injury at this point, from where we're sitting today, we can't possibly diagnose it, but we do know that most insurance companies would not have given him insurance at that particular point. He did not look like he had a long and healthy life in front of him. Was he in pain at this point? Most likely. Was he terminal? Yeah, he was terminal, even though it's, you know, as I said, the injury is not clear. What was he afraid of? He was afraid of being tortured. He was afraid of being tortured, that's what he says. Other people read all kinds of other things into it, which are very interesting and very important, but are not necessarily relevant. For example, there are those who read into it that being the king, he was saving other lives, because if he would have been captured, then the army would have had to send all their soldiers out to try to recapture the king, and many people would have been killed along the way. That's a wonderful argument, it's just not what it says. What did it actually say? That he was afraid of being tortured, and therefore he asked to be killed. Now, what's the conclusion we have from the story? Exactly. We have no idea what to do with this story. Which means, do we say, well, Shaul was a great man of Israel. He was head and shoulders above everybody else, right? Literally, that's what it says about Shaul. So therefore, do we conclude his behavior must have been right? Or would we say, you know what, Shaul had his issues. The man may have been bipolar, he certainly had... Right, and he ran off to his sorcerers and so on and so forth. And if we look at his other behavior, it's not exactly correct behavior. So therefore, how exactly do we conclude based on Shaul? So what's the answer? We have no idea. I'm saying we have no idea what to do with this story. Now, will this stop later authorities from debating? I'm going both ways. No, it won't stop them. And you will find through the Middle Ages some claiming, look at this, here you have a precedent where one can commit suicide. Koshol did. Listen, he's a Jewish guy. How could it be wrong? It's like coming to Israel and saying, you know, in the stories, things written in Hebrew must be kosher. It's written in Hebrew. So we know that everything in Hebrew is kosher. If Shol did it, it must be right. And you all realize that there's a limit to that logic. On the other hand, you have people coming out and saying black and white. No, Shaul was wrong. But as I said, this story here, you have case study precedent. So what did it do for us? Answer?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Okay, good. As long as we got past that. Just in terms of one being able to take one's life, here's what I mean by agadot, and I have no idea what to do with them. You can all decide how seriously to take these. Source number two, Gemara in Brachot, v'amar Rav Zutra bar Tuvia amar Rav, v'amrila, some say it was, amar Rav Chana bar Bizna, amar Rav Yishim ben Chasida, v'amrilav, and some say that the tradition is amar Rav Yochan, Mishim Rav Yishim ben Yochai. Bottom line, three different possible traditions where this came from. Noach lo la'adam shi'apil atzmo l'toch kivshon ha'esh. It's better for a person to throw themselves into a fiery furnace, va'al yabin p'nei chaveir barabim, and not to embarrass somebody else publicly. So any of you can come and tell me, oh, look, here's a source that suicide is allowed. Anybody willing to justify it? Anybody willing to make that argument? Good, neither am I. As I said, it's a very nice statement, and it tells us what does this statement really tell us? How bad it is to embarrass somebody. That's really what it says. And you all know that there are sources that say to embarrass somebody is as if you've killed them, so maybe it's better, you know, killing somebody is very bad. The Rambam actually even says that as you embarrass somebody, the blood leaves their face, and then they turn white for a second. So he says it literally is shfichat damim. Good. With all that, is anybody willing to tell me that you're willing to take this Gemara and rule on, based on this, that a person can commit suicide? Again, it's a very, very difficult argument. I'll share with you another Gemara that I learned this week in Daf Yomi. What? Right. It's so bad to embarrass someone. That's really the issue. Correct. That's clearly. So here's a Gemara that I learned this week. I liked it. But again, you'll tell me what the conclusion is. Rav Kahana hava kemizavin dikule. He used to sell baskets, which the commentaries tell us was not necessarily a dignified job, was not necessarily a lucrative job. And it means that he sold baskets that women would use in order to go shopping and things like that. So he used to go walk around where the women were, and he would sell their baskets. That's how he made a living. Now, this is Rav Kahana, who was considered to be a very prominent rabbi from the Gemara. Tiv'ate hi matrinita, which means a certain woman who our understanding is married. We can debate how much that makes a difference, but I'm not getting into that at all. But that's what the word matron, how it's translated into English over here. A matron, you see, is a direct translation of matronita. It's the same word. A certain matron, tavate. Tavate means that she made very certain immoral demands upon him. Anyone who doesn't understand, come over to me after class. Amarla, he said to her, Azil ishkit nafshe. Let me go slip into something more comfortable. No, what he said is, let me make myself look nice. Kishut, let me make myself look nice. You okay? Salik, he went v'kanafil mi'igra la'ara, and he jumped off the roof. Maybe she wasn't good looking. I don't know. But apparently we have over here, again, a very strange case. We have a rabbi. Is he tempted or is he not tempted? Is he about to go and sin? Is he about to not go and sin? He makes his choice. What's his choice? Rather than commit an illicit sexual act, he's prepared to jump off the roof.
That's
right. I didn't want to embarrass her. She was a balas chesed, she wanted to share, and he didn't think it was nice. Again, so, but by the way, there's sometimes people, I've seen people quote the story, they just quote it till here. The conclusion is much, much better. As he's coming down, Ata Eliyahu Kablei. Eliyahu comes flying across the world and catches him. And Eliyahu gives him an argument. Amalei, Atrichten Abim Aparsi. You bothered me, you dragged me from halfway around the world to come and catch you. Amalei, Migoramli. He goes, you know, what's the cause of all this? Lav Aniyuta? Isn't it because I'm poor? Because of my financial situation, I ended up getting into this situation. Yovle Shipo Didinire. And Eliyahu then gave him a whole bunch of money. Now, isn't that a wonderful conclusion to the story? Now, is anybody here willing to take this story and to use it as the basis, you know, maybe use it as a get-rich scheme, you know? If you're poor, jump off the window. Eliyahu will be there in a minute. Again, what to do with stories like this? If I were you, I would be very, very hesitant to draw conclusions from this. So you can come back and say, but it's Rav Kahana, he's a big rabbi, so therefore suicide is allowed. On the other hand, you could say Eliyahu didn't let him, so it's not allowed. So you can do whatever you want to with this story. Enjoy. This is my present to you. Let's continue. And you know, I would be so much happier, I know I'm repeating myself already now, if we really had a halachic source to go on. We don't. So let's go to the next agadic source, which does become a central part of the discussion. Both of suicide and euthanasia. And it's a source which you've heard and you're familiar with, you know part of it, you heard some of it, but you'll see it's actually a very difficult source and it's mutual, and there are two lines in which are mutually exclusive and self-contradictory. So let's see. Amru, this is telling us one of the stories about the time of the Roman persecutions. Lo ha'yomim mu'atim achinifter Rabbi Yossi min Kisma v'hochako gudul ha'romi l'kavro v'hispidu hesped gadol uv'chazaratan Matsuhu the Rabbi Chanina ben Tradun she Yosef aosek v'Torah umakil kilo parabim v'sef v'Torah monach lo b'chiko. The Gemara, as very often it does, it gives us the context. It says that there was a rabbi who passed away, and many people went to the funeral on the way back, including the Romans. So apparently, this rabbi was some type of. I'm not saying that he worked with them, but maybe he was politically wise to know how to have the appreciation of the Romans. But they come back and they find Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion. Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion is the father-in-law of Yemeir. He is the father of Bruria. Okay, and there's a whole interesting series of Gemaras and even more interesting Rashis that talk about Bruria right after this, which we did not include over here. But I believe she does make an appearance in the story, but not by name, you'll see. He was caught teaching Torah publicly. He had a Torah scroll with him. Hevi'uhu, they took him. V'karchuhu b'sefer Torah, and they wrapped him up in his sefer Torah. V'hikifuhu b'chavilei zmurot, v'tzitu b'hen et ha'or. They wrapped him in the Torah, they took twigs, they lit the twigs on fire, v'hiviu sfugin shel tzemer, and then they took wool, v'sharum b'mayim, soaked the wool in water, v'nichum alibo, and they put it near his chest. Why? That he should not die too quickly. Yes, this is one of the Aseret Harugei Malchut. So Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion is not only being murdered, he is being tortured, and they are taking steps to assure that his death will take place as slowly as possible. Omru lo bito. His daughter says to him, he had two daughters, but presumably it's Bruria, Abba or Eich Bikach, father, how can I see you like this? Amarla, he says to her, Il mole aninis rafti levadi, haya hadavar kasheli. Had I died by myself, then perhaps it would be difficult. Achshav she'aninis raf v'sefer Torah imi, now that I am being killed and the Torah is with me, mi shemevakesh elbonah shel sefer Torah, Hu yivakesh elboni, he who will take vengeance on the destruction of the Sefer Torah will also, desecration of the Sefer Torah, will also take vengeance upon me. Amr lo tamidav, his students say to him, Rebbe ma'a Torah eh, what do you see? Now, what does that mean, what do you see? It's not very clear. It seems like it's only a good question if you know what his answer is going to be. I think what do you see over here may be a very general, what do you see, what does the future hold, what, you know, Again, it's during the Hadrianic persecutions, and this is not a wonderful time for the Jews, and or perhaps they're asking literally, you know, what do your eyes see? He gives them a very interesting answer. Amar lehem, he says to them, Gilyon nisrafin, the Torah scroll is being burnt, va'otiyot perchot, but the letters are flying back in the air, flying back up into heaven. This is a theme that we've seen before. We've seen this when Moshe breaks the Aseret HaDibrot, and we're told there's a Midrash that tells us the letters all went back up into heaven. What's he saying? What's the metaphor? This is a metaphor. So what's the metaphor? Yes.
Exactly.
The metaphor is the body can be killed, but the soul lasts on. So what do the students then respond? Af ata patach picha v'tikanes b'cha ish. They said, if that's the case, then why don't you, if it's just your body, do something to speed up death, because the soul is obviously going. Again, we understand that's really what the conversation is. Once he talked about the letters and the scroll, then that was clearly, again, at least in our mind, it's clearly a metaphor for the body and the soul. If they say that's the case, then what does it make a difference? The body dies, let the body die even quicker, speed it up, and the soul will last on. But then the problem is his answer. Amar lehen, he says, Mutav sheyitlena mishanatna va'al yachbal hu ba'atzmo. Let he who gave life take life, and let man not harm himself. Now, the truth is we can stop right here, and if we stopped right here, I would be guilty of taking something out of context, and then it would be very clear, and I can assure you right now that in discussions on ethics, people will go this far, and then they have a very neat passage, which is very simple. The problem is the continuation. And the continuation I'm not going to deal with this week. I'll deal with next week, Bali Neder. But let's read it anyway. Amalo Klatz Denuri, the executioner, says to him, Rebbe, apparently this hardened Roman executioner who had seen many executions, hearing this conversation, underseeing this man's dignity, understanding the conversation in terms of the immortality of the soul and how life in this world is not as important as the soul, gets momentarily overwhelmed, and he says to him, Im ani marbe b'shalhevet, if I increase the flames, v'notel sfugin, and take away the wool, the wet wool, shel tzemer me'al libcha, from on top of your heart, atami vi'enu l'chayelam haba, will you take me to the world to come? Amar lohen, he says yes. Hishaval li, he says swear to me. Nishbalo, he swore to him. Miyad hirbe b'shalhevet, he increased the flames, v'notel sfugin shel tzemer me'al libo. By the way, is it ethical to lie to the person who's murdering you? Does anybody have a problem with that? So now the question, is he telling the truth or is he lying? Again, would anybody have a moral problem if he in fact was lying to this man? So that's not the problem. Which means his ability to assure this man that yes, you have a share in the world to come is not the main issue. What's the main issue? By the way, does this sound like euthanasia to you?
Yes.
So can I increase the flames? Can I take away? So, all of us are going to die anyway. But I know. But I'm just saying is that in terms of the discussion of euthanasia, this becomes a very real. So do you realize now how unfair it would have been to stop the line before with that, you know, glorious, let he who gave life take life, and then the next line the guy says, you know, what if I increase the flames? I got a deal for you. And not only that, I'll take you to the world to come. And he says yes. So what does it then say? He does it, yatsa nishmato b'mehira. At that point, he died much more rapidly. Af hu kafatz b'nafal l'tocha or. And then the executioner committed suicide and he jumped into the fire. Yatsa bat kol v'amra. So how can you have a story like this without having a bat kol at the end? And said, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion v'kaltz denuri and his executioner mizuman hein l'chayel omaba are both formally invited and they have a share in the world to come. And then you have Rebbe, as in other Gemaras like this, cries at the end, Bacha Rebbe v'Amar, Yesh kona olamo b'sha achad, v'yesh kola olamo b'kama shanim. There are those who can achieve religious greatness in a second, and some who take years and years and years to achieve religious greatness. So, as I said, what did I say before we started this source? It's mutually exclusive, self-contradictory, and we have no idea what to do with this again. We have this glorious statement of Rav Chaim ben Tradion, let he who gave life take life, and let man not harm himself. Right, it's a Shabbos goy. Not only can you sell him your chametz, you could...
But the whole thing, like, the guy is killing him, so what if he's making it a bit easier? Okay. Like, this orphan in court, you know, says, have pity on me, I'm an orphan, he killed his child.
Okay, we'll come back to this. That's probably a very fair statement.
Yes, but everything is relative. Say somebody's hooked up on life support, so they're dying anyway, so unplug it now, or they're dying.
Can we make a deal? Let's leave euthanasia. I agree, this is an important source. Your homework is to think about this source. Let's continue meanwhile. We're going to come back to sources 5 and 6, because that's really the key, but they're going to make reference to source number 7. So let's read source number 7 first, and then we'll come back and see how they connected. One is the Tosfot, and the other is the Ritva, right on that passage. Source number 7. Now, I have to warn you about source number 7. Those of you who keep track of such things, it's a source from Gemara Gittin, Daf Nun Zayin, which probably doesn't mean all that much to most of us right now, except that Gittin, Daf Nun Zayin, is the area where all the Gemarot about the Chorban take place. That's where Kamtza Bar Kamtza is. That's where the story of the tragedy of the Chorban is spelled out over around 3 pages. So, which means that this Gemara is, as we're about to see in Agadah, the main focus of the Agadah is not necessarily to teach us halakha, unless you think it is, that you'll tell me. I think the main purpose is to tell us just how tragic the Churban, the destruction, actually was. Amr Rav Yehuda, Amr Shmuel. Rav Yehuda taught in the name of Shmuel, V'itamer Rabbi Ami, and some say he taught in the name of Rabbi Ami. And some say, no, this was taught in the academy. By the way, if you're noticing these things, the Gemara is very careful when it tells traditions where the tradition is from. And sometimes if it comes from two places, it will tell you that this comes from two places. And if there's confusion, it'll tell you there's confusion exactly where it was heard. But they really tried to tell over the teachings with a great deal of care. Ma'aser ba'arbama ot yeladim v'yeladot shenishbula kalon. Once upon a time, there were 400 children who were captured, and they were going to be used for immoral purposes. Now, this is one of the stories by the time of the Churban that when the Romans destroyed, they saw, and they took all the good-looking boys and all the good-looking girls, and they put them on a boat, and they start sending them to Rome. Hirgishu ba'atzman l'mahen mitbakshin. When they started looking around at one another and realizing which kids were taken, they had a sense of what the purpose was, and a rumor spreads about what they're going to be used for. Amru, they ask, Im tovin biyam, anu ba'in l'chayilum abba? Question comes up among the children, if we jump overboard, will we have a share in the world to come? Dorash lahen hagadol shebehen. The oldest of the kids gets up and he says a drasha. And he says, it says in Tehillim, Amar Hashem, God said, Mi Bashan Ashiv Ashiv. Mi Bashan Ashiv Ashiv Mi Mitzilot Yam. I will return you from a place called Bashan, and I will return you from the depths of the sea. Mi Bashan Ashiv. He explains, this is his drasha. We don't even know if he's bar mitzvah yet. We don't even know if he gets given a bar mitzvah drasha. This is the oldest kid there. He says, he quotes a verse and he says, you know, Bashan, mi bein shinei aryeh ashiv. Those who were killed by the lions, which perhaps the Romans did that as well, God says, I will take back. Mi mitzulot yam, those who ended up in the depths of the sea. Elu, he explains, shetovin biyam. Those who jumped, who drowned in the sea, I will bring back. Kevin sheshema yiladot kach. When the girls heard this, kaftzu kulam v'naflu l'toch hayam. Then all the girls jumped overboard and they killed themselves. Nasu yiladim kal v'chomer batzman. Then all the boys said, kal v'chomer v'amru, ma halalu sherdarkan l'kach, what regarding the girls were the acts that would have been done to them would have been what they considered to be natural, kach, they killed themselves, anu she'en darkeinu l'kach, we who will be used for unnatural activities, al achat kamba v'chama, all the more so, we should be killing themselves, avhem katsu l'toch hayam, they too jumped into the water, into the sea. Valeim hakatuv, now the Gemara seems to be giving an editorial conclusion, and that's what it says, Omer in Tehillim, ki alecha harguni kol hayom nechshavnu katzon tivcha. I cried for you all day, we were like sheep to the slaughter. Now is that a sad story? Mm-hmm. It's a tragic story. You want to draw halakhic conclusions from this? These are the sources that we need to deal with. Any of you ever hear the story about the 93 Beit Yaakov girls who killed themselves during the Holocaust? It's okay, it never happened. What? It never happened. How could it be? I can tell you how it could be. It was on the front page of the New York Times. Okay, now what do you think? It happened or not? I know. It's a very unfortunate example. It's a story that claims that 93 Beit Yaakov girls were going to be taken to be used for the sexual amusement of Nazis, the Gestapo even, and then when they heard about this, they said, we need to prepare ourselves, and they all committed suicide, they all died. The problems with the story are many, and but those who told the story, they based it upon this. They said, there weren't Beis Yaakov. Okay, if you're interested, there's an article written on this by Professor Judy Baumel and Jay Schachter. They co-authored an article together. And if you want, if anybody emails me, I should be able to send you a copy of it. And the unfortunate thing about the story, the reason it was written was somebody during the Holocaust from Europe felt that people were not responding enough. So he wrote a story which was similar to this kind of story. He made it up in order to get people's attention. Of course, it then became this incredible symbol in many places, and Beis Yaakov's all over the world, it's taught. The only problem is that none of the victims' names are known. There was no Beis Yaakov in the place that supposedly had happened. And you can keep on, and Nazis did not regularly use Jewish girls for such things, certainly not in a public way, certainly not in a mass way like that, because they themselves would have been executed for breaking the Nuremberg laws. And I'm saying you can go into all the details. There is no historical evidence for this, even though it's very well known, as you pointed out. As I said, the fact that it was on the front page of the New York Times should be enough for all of us to know that it may not necessarily be true. But that story, and by the way, it's very unfortunate because this plays into the hands of people who then will deny the Holocaust and said, look, people made up stories. And the truth is, some people did make up stories. And it's not the only famous Holocaust story of martyrdom that was made up. There are others as well. Very famous stories, unfortunately, because sometimes people write fiction better than they chronicle what really happened. Yes, what's the matter, Jane?
I just don't know what to do all of this.
Good, so let me continue. Jane has to tell me. She has to tell me. I don't know what to do with this.
I mean, Yonah jumped into the ocean. I mean, why do we have to go to these guys?
So maybe Yonah was wrong.
Yonah jumped off the ship and tried to drown himself. Haran jumped into the furnace and killed
himself. Wasn't Jewish. You'll see why we want to use this, because this story right here became a focal point in terms of a much larger discussion that took place. That's why we're hearing this story. And basically we have over here a contradiction between two different things. We have Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion standing up heroically and saying that he who gave life take life, despite the end of the story that we still need to grapple with. And then we have this story over here of the 400 children who jumped in. Now, the truth is, all of us, if we were dealing with this on an exclusively legal perspective, I think we would have a great deal of difficulty saying, oh, here we have the case study, here we have the precedent, and now we can feel very comfortable with telling people that if you're in this kind of situation, you are indeed permitted to kill yourselves. Why? Because I said it before we read it, and I hope I convinced some of you. What was the conclusion the Gemara had of the story? Not that this is right, not that this is wrong, but what is it? I'm going to cry all day because we were like sheep to the slaughter. That's the conclusion of the story. That's how the Gemara is using it.
required to.
To? Yeah, go ahead.
No,
to what?
To kill yourself?
No, what does it really say? There are three situations. There are three situations. That's a real good question. If you want to see that source, let's look at 11 for a moment. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, page 5. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadak, Nimnu v'gamru ba'aliyat beit natza bilud. It was voted on, determined, decided, established in this place in Lud. The fact that it was in an attic in Lud makes it sound that it was during a time of prosecution where they could not meet in the Beit Midrash. This was not an open discussion. And what do they decide there? Kol aveir shebetaraim omru la'adam avur v'al taharog. And this is halacha l'maseh during their time period. If somebody tells you to break a law, ya'avur v'al yahareg. Let me read again. Kol aveir shebetaraim omru la'adam avur v'al taharog. That you al taharog. Do it. And not to be, or to be killed, ya'avor v'al yahareg, do it and do not be killed. Chutz me avodah zarah v'gila rayot v'shvicha tamim. Except for three things. What are the three things? To be guilty of avodah zarah, to be guilty of gila rayot, and to be guilty of shvicha tamim, which means spilling blood. Now this is very interesting. If suicide is spilling blood, then why would you let it to spill blood in order to avoid one of the others? Meaning that becomes an absurdity. By the way, would Rav Kahana have argued with me? Perhaps, because what did Rav Kahana say? He was about to be involved in the case of Gil Ariot, so what does he do? He goes and jumps off the roof. So maybe there is a heart. I mean, if I had to ask you right now, of these three, which is worse, what would you say? Maybe it's unfair. Maybe I'm not allowed to ask that question. Maybe they're all the same. Okay, I won't ask it. I withdraw the question. Murder is worse? And what's the next worse? Okay, as I said, you can all decide which one's... If there is indeed a hierarchy over here, or if there's not, there's reasons to claim any of them are better or worse. But what does the Gemara say? Does the Gemara say anything about proactively murdering yourself? Or does the Gemara say that that you are to break every law in the Torah, break every single law in the Torah if somebody forces you, because preservation of life is the most important thing, except for three instances. And those three instances are murder, sexual sins, and idolatry. In those cases, one is supposed to let themselves be killed. Now let's go to the sources that we skipped. Let's start with 5. Tosfot. Va'al yachbal atzmo. Remember that? Let he who gave life take life, but man should not harm himself. Amar Rabbeinu Tam. What was Rabbeinu Tam's real name? Yaakov. Do you understand why he was called Rabbeinu Tam? Good. Yaakov Ish Tam. Yaakov was a man who was Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam's real name was Yaakov. Amar Rabbeinu Tam. Dehecha sheyir'em pen ya'avirum ovdei kochavim la'avera. When a person is afraid that idolaters will force them to commit sin, kigon al yidei yisurin. For example, because by virtue of torture, shelo yuchal la'amod behem, that a person will not be able to withstand the torture, az hu mitzvah lachbal ba'atzmo, then it is a mitzvah for that person to harm himself. Ki yahi degitin, as the case in Gittin, gabe yiladim shenishbu l'kalon, sheitilo atzman liyan, as is the case of the children who were captured and threw themselves into the water. Rabbeinu Tam just now made an incredible argument, and there's a leap over here. What was the leap?
That story was true.
Aside from that, there's another leap that he made. What was the leap?
Exactly.
Which means all that we had learned till now, there are three things that are considered to be so severe that you're supposed to let yourself be killed rather than do them. No one said you can kill yourself. And what would be the absurdity of killing yourself? Because killing yourself may very well be one of those three things. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, that there's a value system which has just been now set up. What's the value system? These three things are worthwhile to die rather than to do. Now, why would you be allowed to kill yourself then? What would Rabbeinu Tam was sitting in the room, what would he then argue? Presumably, he would then argue that it then becomes justified. And if it's justified, it's no longer murder. So I can kill myself to avoid myself. And let's use one more word now, which we'll get into Rabbeinu Tam's world, to avoid being baptized. Because that's what Rabbeinu Tam was dealing with. Because that's what he had to deal with, and now here comes the terrible secret, not just in terms of things going on during his own lifetime, but the reputation of the martyrs who had lived two generations before. These people were considered to be martyrs within the Jewish community. How's Rabbeinu Tam going to get up and say that all the people that killed themselves are actually terrible sinners? Theoretically, and I said I didn't want to talk about suicide, theoretically, if somebody committed suicide, they would be buried by the edge of the Jewish cemetery. Whether that happens today or not is more likely than anything else a function of our understanding of psychology today, which is not necessarily should be seen as brand new. In Masechet Smachot, it brings an example where a kid cut school, just to make it, I mean, it's absolute contemporary, and the father got wind of it and says, when I get my hands on him, I'm gonna, I don't know what. And the kid was frightened until he went to the top of the roof and he jumped off the roof and he was killed. And the Gemara and the Masechet Smachot there said, bury this kid with all rights and privileges. He was under psychological duress because his father threatened him. He was more afraid of his father than anything else. And what's the conclusion there? Rabbi Kiva then says, fathers, be very careful how you discipline your children. Don't go put so much fear in their hearts that they're going to go do harm to themselves. In terms of education, it's a fascinating source. In terms of suicide, it's a fascinating source. For our discussion today, it's not as relevant, but it's interesting nonetheless. Now, we just now made one leap. You saw the leap? Was it a big leap or not a big leap? Okay. It's nothing compared to the next leap. Source 6. Katvu Begilyoni HaTosfot. Now this is the Ritva writing in Spain in the 13th century, quoting what he's heard the rabbis from Germany and France having said a little bit earlier. Katvu Begilyoni HaTosfot Shehoya Omer Rabbeinu Tam. Now he's quoting the same authorities, quoting Rabbeinu Tam. Now we get another perspective in what we just now saw. Dehecha shemityare shelo yachrichuhu la'avor al dat, mutar lechbo batzmo. That when a person's afraid that they're going to force them to go against the religion, which really, what does this mean? What was that word? Baptized. Then a person's allowed to kill themselves. Now you ready for the second leap? Mikan lomdin, from here people learn, l'shchot hane'arim b'gzeirot b'mnei avar dat. From here people learn that you're allowed to murder or kill, however you want to translate that, children during the Crusades. I translate Crusades, I'll translate the words literally. Mikan lomdim l'shchot. From here people conclude one is allowed to kill hane'arim, the children, b'gzeirot, during the times of persecution, b'pnei havrat hadat, when you're afraid that they will force them to convert. Oh. Which means we were just now, till now we were talking, how did it start? But you saw the steps? The first thing, if somebody says, either be baptized or die, so what would the Gemara and Sanhedrin say? They say, you want to kill me? Kill me. I cannot be baptized. That's it. Kill me. Assuming that being baptized is avodah zarah, which is probably a pretty good assumption. The next step that we saw, well, you're afraid, you know yourself, you're going to give in to the torture. Are you allowed to kill yourself in order to avoid yourself because you're not going to have a chance? Now, that goes back to the case with the kids. The kids were saying to themselves, we will be used for the sexual pleasure of the Romans. We are children, we will not be able to withstand. So what's better, to be forced into a life of prostitution or to kill ourselves now and die at this point? The children drew the conclusion it's better to die right now. They were concerned. If we kill ourselves, do we still have a share in the world to come? And the kid got up and said, of course you have a share in the world to come because God will bring you back from the depths of the sea. Nice drasha, beautiful drasha. Is it true? Who knows? Nonetheless, they made that decision because what did they say? That we won't be able to withstand. Not because of the duress. Physically, all those children would have been raped. So they say, it's better for us to die than to find ourselves in that situation. Rabbeinu, what's the matter? There may have been other people, whatever, on the boat. That's the same. Good question. Good question. There may have been other people who were captured as well. But nonetheless, what we just now saw was, so then the step that you're able to proactively do something to harm yourself to avoid one of those three things, that was the first leap that we saw in Rabbeinu Tam. The second leap was, well, if I'm already allowed to kill myself, so what's the matter with killing somebody else? Which means, what would happen to the father or the mother who are adults, and the crusaders come in, And the crusade, and you're going to follow what you perceive to be the letter of the law. They say either convert or die, and you say, I have no choice, and you die. And your children are too young to make that choice, so they're sitting there afterwards. So you're going to die, be a martyr, and now your children will be taken off and raised as Christians. That was the choice that was faced by the people in Europe in 1098. That was their choice. So what conclusion did they make? Better to kill our kids, better to kill ourselves, rather than be forced into Christianity. Now, can we all agree that we don't want to be put in such situations and we don't want to judge such situations? But what we have over here is a euthanasia of a whole different type. That when I said we'll talk about euthanasia, you didn't think I was going to talk about cases like this. But this is a euthanasia is a mercy killing to kill the children in order to avoid what they perceive to be the worst.
Save their souls.
Is this disturbing? Yes, it's disturbing. Before we conclude for today.
What about all the Muranos? The people who faked their
conversion, hit out the basement. As a strategy, it didn't work that well, which means most of them were still
Christian.
Yeah, didn't work. Look at source number 12. First, let me show you what it goes on. Sorry, first go to 9 and then... Okay, correct. Let's finish the Ritva. She liked the end of the Ritva. Fine. Ad kan matzati, fine. We're still in 6. Ad kan matzati begliyonei tosfot. This is what I found written. Vehem dvarim shetzrichim talmud ve'iyun gadol. And this is something which requires incredible analysis. Avol shekvar harazaken. But Rabbeinu Tam already gave his ruling. V'shamanu b'shem gdolei Tzarfat, and we heard from the leaders, the rabbis in Tzarfat, shehitiru kein halacha l'maaseh. This was not theory, this is what really happened. Now, I have to go into a slight historical analysis over here. This whole issue has been incredibly debated by historians, which means when Rabbeinu Tam writes about this, and he's allowing it, is he allowing it during his lifetime, or is Rabbeinu Tam justifying a previous generation of behavior? And it's very, very different. I mean, I'll read to you a next generation after Rabbeinu Tam, Maharami Rutenberg. Now, he's a very interesting character himself. He was in his lifetime considered to be the greatest authority in the world. Maharami Rutenberg, as some of you know, was kidnapped and he was held for ransom and gave an order that no one is to pay the ransom, and he spent the rest of his life in prison. He has a number of different, a very interesting tshuvot, because it was a time of persecution as well. He has a question as follows. I'll read it to you in English. A Jew asked Rabbi Meir, may he live long, is penance required of someone who slaughtered his wife and 4 children during the Great Massacre? And this was a massacre on April 12, 1265. No, you don't have this. The blood-soaked city, okay, right, because they asked him to kill them, for they saw that God's wrath had been kindled, and the enemies, the Christians, began slaughtering the children of the living God. He too wished to kill himself and die with them, but God wished otherwise and saved him by the Gentiles, which means they stopped him from killing himself. So you want to hear the first line of the, so what did this man do? He comes in and says, I killed my wife, I killed my children during this, and now he comes over and says to his rabbi, so what, do I need to do tshuva now? Did I do mitzvah? What did I do? Any of you want to play rabbi now? And he, Rabbi Meir, wrote him, I'm at a loss about how to rule. Now, everything he says afterwards, will you keep in mind that that's his opening line? I'm at a loss how to rule. Which means, what's he saying right away? How can you, first of all, how do you say yes? And secondly, how do you say no? And how do you, what do you say to such a person? And then he writes, after that, certainly one who kills himself for the unity of God is permitted to do so. And he goes into the case of the 400 children, and so on and so forth. And he talks about how there is a great tradition of this in Ashkenaz. When I say great, I don't mean wonderful. I mean that there was a tradition of people behaving this way in Ashkenaz, which means, again, he's stuck. Does he say... See, it's very interesting in terms of and what I'm reading from right here is actually an article by Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, who has one very clear position. If anybody wants his articles on this, I can send them to you as well. You can, Ask Me Again. They're long but very interesting articles, but you have a problem in terms of if there is something which is socially acceptable within the community, so then how do the rabbis respond to it? This is not rabbis getting up and saying, this is what I think you should be doing. How does he? What does he really begin and say? Like, what am I supposed to say over here? To realize that even within Ashkenaz, there was a great deal of tension. Let's now look at source 9 and then 12. 9 is the verses that Marian was searching for before. The Ach Edimchen Lenafshech Techem Edrosh. This is what's called one of the seven Noahide laws. This is said after the flood. And God says, and surely your blood of your lives I require. Edrosh mi yad kol chaya, edroshenu, umiyad ha'adam, umiyad ish achiv edrosh et nefesh ha'adam, shofech dam ha'adam, ba'adam damo yishofech, ki betzelon ki masata adam. What this is saying over here is that you're not allowed to spill blood. It's understood by certain authorities, certain midrashim, that this is the source against suicide as well. Although we do have to point out that here is a source which would therefore be the seven Noahed laws. And part of the reason for claiming this is because it seems a bit repetitive. But we find the commentary, and I know that all of us, when we would learn Chumash, we're used to Rashi. If we were to learn Gemara, we know that there's Rashi and Tosfot. What some of us don't necessarily know is that there is also Tosfot on the Chumash and some very interesting commentaries. If you look in the back of some versions of the Makrot Gedolot, you'll find multiple comments of the Tosfot school. Here is the commentary of Tosfot to this verse. V'achet dimchem, that I will require you when you spill blood. Azhara l'chonek atzmo. Here we have a midrash. I was very careful before when I said that there's no source in the Mishnah, and there's no source in the Gemara, and no source in the Tosefta, but there is in the Midrash. Here, I'm in source 12, sorry. Azhara l'chonek atzmo. This is the prohibition against killing oneself. I will require your blood from he who spills blood. V'amru b'reshit rabba, yochel afil k'chananya misho v'azariya, Talmud lomar, ach. Ach means but, which means there are exceptions, which means I would think that you're allowed to kill yourself in certain situations, but there's an exception. Ach, pirish, yochel afilu kmo elu shemasrin atzman l'kedush ad Hashem, shelo yochol lechbo batzmo, im hu yorei shelo yochol batzmo la'amod b'niseyon. Talmud lomar, ach, ki b'shat hashmad yochol emsor atzmo l'mita ul'arog atzmo. There are exceptions to the prohibition of suicide, meaning if you're afraid that you will give in, willfully, you won't be able to stand against the torture, then he says that you're allowed to kill yourself. Whose position is this? Rabbeinu Tam. We've already seen it. So this should not come as a great surprise. V'chein b'Sha'ul ben Kish, sha'amar l'na'aro shlov charbecha. Now we went back to Sha'ul, when he said to the arms bearer, draw your sword, v'dakreni ba, Talmud lomar, ach, that's an exception, therefore it's allowed. She'im yirei adam shem yasu lo yisurim kashin. Now this one just broader. If a person's afraid that they're going to be put in a situation of great pain, shelo yechol lasbol, he won't be able to withstand the pain, ulamod b'nisayon, and stand up to the test, she'achol arogat atzmo, he's allowed to kill himself. Now, when we read Sha'ul, we didn't realize or even think that anything had to do with conversion over there, and I'm not even sure if he's reading that into the text, but he seems to be making allowances. And by the way, if we take this too seriously, you're not allowed to kill yourself, except which situation? If you're in pain. So what did you just now do? You just now basically allowed, and pain, presumably to be physical pain, which is, if you feel really good about yourself, then you're absolutely not allowed to kill yourself. Who knows? You can't even play Russian roulette, okay? Umikan mivin ra'aya otan sheshachtina tinok b'shat ha'gzera. And people bring this as a source, as a proof, for those who've killed children during the times of the persecutions. V'yesh osrin. And there's some people who say, what are you talking about? That's not allowed. Umifarshim, and they say, ken, they say kach, yochol k'chanani v'chaverav, shekfar nimsiru l'mita. Maybe in the cases like chanani v'shov azariya, tamad lomar, ach, there are exceptions. Aval einu yochol arogat atzmo, but you're not allowed to kill yourself. Yochol k'shol shemasar atzmo l'mita. Perhaps you're allowed to kill yourself like Sha'ul. Tamad lomar, ach, pirish, she'enu yochol lechbol batzmo. Which now he drew the exact opposite conclusion. No, you're not allowed to kill yourself. V'sha'ul shelob rishut chachamim asa. And Sha'ul was wrong. Now those of you who were trying to follow the English and didn't follow it, now take a look at what he brings. He then says something called Maharash Bar Avram HaMachuna Uchman. There was this rabbi who quotes the following story. There was a rabbi who killed many children during the Crusades. For he was afraid that they would be baptized. There's another rabbi with him, who was very upset with him, and he called him a murderer. And the first rabbi wasn't particularly concerned. And the one who was upset said, if I'm right, this other person will die a horrific death. Like the death of Rabbi Kiva, they skinned him alive, and they put sand between the skin and the flesh of Basar. And after that crusade ended. And had he not killed those kids, they would have survived. So what we see over here is that even within Tosfot, that there is a tension between those who said okay and those not okay, and to what extent this was accepted or not accepted. Now I just want to conclude for today. We saw some very interesting things, at least in my mind. If you disagree with me, don't tell me. We read sources which were horrific, which were disturbing, which we would prefer not ever having happened. But we're also very bothered that the halachic discourse that took place all centered on stories. And there was no firm halachic discussion over here. And it's difficult. As far as creating the basis for a discussion on euthanasia, I hope all of you now realize why we studied these sources. Because we do have a basis for it. Next week we're going to continue and go more towards the euthanasia question and get more towards questions which are legal, but I just want to conclude for today. We saw that there's a tension. We saw there's a difference of opinion. You could accuse me of being opinionated over here, but those who prohibit such behavior are on much firmer legal grounds than those who approved of such behavior. And even those who approved of such behavior, most of them only approved of such behavior post facto, when there already was a history of martyrdom. And what exactly do you say about the martyr who died al Kiddush Hashem rather than being baptized, when it's possible they didn't act in a halachically approved manner? Are you going to get up and tell them that actually they're notorious sinners instead of kedoshim? Within Ashkenaz, these people were kedoshim. That's the situation. They are kadosh. Were they wrong? That's up for the authorities, maybe for God to determine, and not necessarily our place to get involved. As far as going further now, in terms of perhaps a more active or proactive euthanasia, that, as I said, we'll have that discussion next week.
I still don't understand the conclusion that the Tosfos, whether you can commit suicide if you're afraid of the pain.
There were those who said yes, and others said absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
So in a contemporary setting, say you've got cancer, and you know you're not...
The answer would be no. There's no... Okay, good. So let's do this next week. Let's do that next week. That's next week. And I'll talk about morphine. Remind me to talk about morphine.